Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
How are you now? How are you right now? How am I? I'm glad I asked, folks. I am under the weather yet again. My kids keep bringing back germs from school, so this might be a short episode, but alas, hello and welcome to episode 76 of the Bottom 6 Minutes podcast presented by Habs Eyes on the Prize. I am Matt Drake, and we're here to talk about your Montreal Canadiens and their final game against the Toronto Maple Leafs this season at the Bell Centre. I guess you could say there was a bit of a chance for them to play spoiler here. Not really, because the Leafs are kind of sandwiched in between the Panthers and Lightning in the Atlantic Division standing. So it looks like a foregone conclusion that the Leafs will be the 3 seed in the Atlantic and probably playing against the Panthers in the first round without home ice advantage. But, you know, for the Habs, if you take a win in that game, you could make their life a little bit harder because Tampa's kind of coming up behind them at this point towards the tail end of the season here. If the Leafs go on a losing streak and Tampa gets a few in a row, you know, it could really change the complexion of that playoff picture before it actually starts. And I think that they probably want to avoid being a wild card team because I don't think they want to take on one of the top teams. So maybe an opportunity there for the Habs to get something done against their rivals. So we'll take you through the recap and everything that happened in that game. But first, the tournament is here. I'm sure you all know about it. March Madness going on right now. We're getting towards the end of it as well. And BetOnline is your bracket headquarters for this season with the best bracket contests out there and odds, lines, and info on every game and every round right up until the national championship. You can access the most up-to-the-minute wagering information anytime from your desktop or your mobile devices and even track your bracket real-time all the way through the tournament. Head to BetOnline today to get in on all of the action. And remember to use promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus and your first deposit. BetOnline, the game starts here. And your Montreal Canadiens had to start their game against the Leafs with a bit of a different look lineup. We talked about this last episode, right? Caden Gooley got that nasty hit from Nikita Kucherov, so he was out. And surprisingly, they announced as well that Arber Jacki was going to be out for this game. Not too sure exactly what caused it in that Lightning game, but obviously a little worse for wear. So they had to call up Justin Barron, and Johnny Kovacevic draws into the lineup as well. And the other thing that I noticed right away upon the game starting was clearly Martin St-Louis made the decision that he was going to be keying Nick Suzuki's line against Austin Matthews' line. Even with the benefit of last change, he wasn't trying to do any kind of exploitation there. He was saying, all right, we're going to give you a really tough test tonight. And it was interesting to see that they were playing really well against that Matthews line early on in the game. I think by the end of the first period, there was something like 66, 67% possession, and a lot of that in the offensive zone as well. So really a super good start for that line against one of the best players in the world. And the play overall through 20 minutes of the game favored the Montreal Canadiens. They had more shots, they had more shot attempts, had possession of the puck more, and they had the better scoring chances for my money. Shots were 9-4 at the end of the period. They generally looked more threatening, but nobody could score. And we also know the Leafs can score in bunches. So you got to keep, you know, we get to the end of the first period at 0-0, but you got to keep that level of play going for the next 40 minutes. And you find out pretty early in the second period why it's so important to maintain that level of play against the Toronto Maple Leafs. Very early in the second period, Habs can't clear the zone. Ilya Lyubushkin gets a point shot on net. It gets tipped by Max Domi on the way, and it's 1-0 for the Leafs. Immediately after that, Leafs get back into the offensive zone. Austin Matthews gets the puck below the goal line. He just spins and throws it out front, and it deflects in off of David Savard's skate. That makes it 2-0 for the Leafs. Few minutes after that, another long, weak shot from the point. for the Leafs is a bad rebound by Semyon Moldambo right into the slot. Matthew Nyes gets a hold of it and puts it home. 3-0 for the Leafs. After that, Ryan Reeves would fight Michael Pezzetta. He was mad at Pezzetta for what was actually a perfectly clean hit that he had landed on his previous shift. That really didn't go well for Michael Pezzetta. Not a fight that he should typically be taking, but kudos to him for being willing to take it. And that seemed to spark the Leafs. They get a rush right after that fight. Bobby McMahon scores on the break to make it 4-0 for the Leafs. That was the end of the night for Semyon Moldambo right there. I only really charged the third goal was his fault. That was a bad rebound. The McMahon goal, I don't even really think that was totally his fault. I think he could have stopped it, but I also understand the desire to take him out of the net there. You know, he's already let in 4. It's clearly not his night. Maybe let's just get him out of there and keep his confidence, you know. So they send out Caden Primo for the rest of the game from there. And look, it's like I said, the Leafs can score in bunches. If you take 5-10 minutes off in the game, you can find yourself in a hole that's very tough to dig yourself out of. But to the Montreal Canadiens' credit, they did, after that 4-0 goal, really start trying to dig themselves out of it. And they get a power play out of their efforts. All of a sudden, Juraj Slafkovský in the corner with the puck, spinning no-look backhand sauce over to the other side, and it's Nick Suzuki receiving the pass, and he snipes it. His 33rd of the year. It's 4-1. The Montreal Canadiens all of a sudden back in this, and now very late in the period, Mike Matheson picks up the puck on the left side in the offensive zone, goes for a skate around the net, goes for a wraparound, but it's a wraparound pass, not a wraparound shot, and he wraps it around and passes it to Cole Caulfield on the other side, who puts it into the net, and it is 4-2. Look at that. All of a sudden, the Montreal Canadiens in short order cut the lead of the Toronto Maple Leafs in half heading into the third period. Can they make a comeback? Not quite. You can tell they're pressing a little bit harder on the forecheck. You know, they're going with like a 2-1-2 for the most part on the forecheck, really trying to put some pressure on the Leafs defense, but they're not really able to get much out of that in the way of quality scoring chances. We get all the way to the final 2 minutes of the period. It's still scoreless, still 4-2 for the Leafs. The Habs pull Caden Primo to get the extra skater out there. They look pretty decent at the 6-on-5, but they're just not doing enough to move defenders around and create lateral movement. A lot of their shots are getting blocked. Juraj Slafkovský had his stick blow up on him on a really good chance. And as a matter of fact, the game ends with that same 4-2 score that was established at the end of the second period. Bit of a wet fart from the Montreal Canadiens after scoring 2 goals and making it look like maybe they were going to storm back into that game. They came out in the third, and again, I felt like they put a little bit more pressure on the forecheck, but they didn't do enough. Just didn't do enough. And I guess you could bring up the argument of whether or not you wanted them to do any more, right? Team Tank, Tank Nation, I'm talking to you there. This is the Ottawa Senators won, or they lost rather, tonight. So this is a game that you probably, you know, you want the Montreal Canadiens to lose. It's, you know, Columbus is below them in the standings, and they're starting, they've won a couple of games in a row, I think. It's, you're starting to look at Tankathon a little bit more and going, all right, how can we get ourselves into the top five of this draft lottery? And one of the ways to do that, of course, is to continue losing games. So, I mean, I get it, right? I think a lot of people were kind of cheering for the Leafs to close that one out and keep the score 4-2. But at the same time, I it was hard for me to not want them to make that comeback, because that would have been kind of delicious to be able to throw that in the face of Leafs fans just a little bit at the end of the season here. We got to have something, right? So anyways, I actually thought overall that was not a bad game from the Montreal Canadiens. It's like I said, in the second period there, they kind of, you know, let their guard down for a little bit, and they found 4 pucks in their net like that. It's, you know, it's a thing that that team can do to you, and it's a thing that I think the Montreal Canadiens are going to find not happening to them as much as they have more experience and as they continue to improve their lineup towards the end of the rebuild. So, realistically, you look at the statistical or the numbers. What am I? This is how sick I am right now. I can't even get my thoughts straight. You look at the stats from that game, and honestly, it paints the picture of a very good game for the Habs. Not an amazing one. I'm not saying that they deserved a win or anything out of that performance, but they looked a lot closer to the Toronto Maple Leafs than they probably should. And I think that's worth something. And of course, not getting 2 points is definitely worth something in terms of the Tankathon numbers. So, not a bad night. And I guess that's a good segue to your silver lining of the night, which I have to just go with the entire first line once again, of the Montreal Canadiens. They played great. They were stuck out there against the Austin Matthews line for pretty much the entire night. That was a calculated decision by Martin St-Louis, and it paid off. They went on the night, 62.86% of shot attempts at even strength. That's pretty darn good against a guy like Matthews. They outscored at even strength the Toronto Maple Leafs 2-1. So they were, you know, outscoring them legitimately, outplaying them. High danger chances oddly favored the Leafs. It was 4-3 in favor of the Leaves when that line was out there, but you know, they cashed in when they needed to, and they played a pretty good five on five game against one of the best players in the league. So this is going to be a really important line for the Montreal Canadiens moving forward. And I've said this on multiple episodes recently, as they improve around that line, it's going to become easier and easier for that line to do what they do best. The one thing that's sticking out for me in recent games is Cole Caulfield in particular. His shooting percentage has been hovering around like 6% this year. His career mark is more like 12%. So when you talk about shooters, right, it's usually, you know, you got to consider the fact that they're going to regress to the mean. So when you have a shooter who's shooting 25%, you know he's not going to do that forever. So you know that there's eventually going to be a come down. When you have a shooter that's shooting 5%, you also know the same thing. You know he's not going to do that forever. There's going to be a come up. And we're starting to see that now from Cole Caulfield. And I'm telling you, if he regresses to the mean next year and he starts shooting at 12, 13%-ish next season, look out, man. Suzuki's going to go over a point per game. Yuri Slavkovsky's probably going to be on 70-point watch. Because Caulfield's getting the looks, right? And this season, he's been getting the looks. They just haven't been going in for him. When they start going in, which eventually they're going to, and they are kind of starting to now, then that's going to lead to a lot more offensive numbers for that line. And it's going to lead to a lot more apples for Suzuki and for Slavkovsky. And it's going to have an ancillary benefit of making other teams fear Caulfield a little bit more again, and that's going to open up space for Suzuki and Slavkovsky to do damage for themselves. That line, listen, I know a lot of people, a lot of fans of the Montreal Canadiens have been worried that we don't have enough elite offensive talent, but that line is, they're bordering on elite now, and they're doing that on a team that's a lottery team. Just wait until they've actually got a proper, you know, middle six in behind them, and maybe a better fourth line as well. It's going to be a very, very potent line when they get a chance. So look, great game from them. Nick Suzuki, what more can you say about the guy? 33 goals in the year. I mean, really absolutely performing above and beyond what his contract expected, or what his contract demands him to do. I'm starting to lose my mind here. You guys remember that stupid article from the guy at The Athletic where he put Nick Suzuki's contract as one of the worst ones in the league? How are you feeling about that now, man? Maybe you shouldn't just run a mathematical model to determine what the worst contracts are without giving anybody an opportunity to actually perform in those contracts. I don't know. Maybe just me. But Nick Suzuki playing extremely well this season. Yuri Slavkovsky, what more is there to say, man? He was a menace against the Leafs, very physical, great on the forecheck, creating a lot of opportunities. He's really good in transition now as well. It's another thing I've been noticing lately. He's got the confidence to pull off some really nice dekes in the neutral zone and create some space for himself when there is no space. And it usually leads to good zone entries, and it leads to opportunities for them from those zone entries. So really been enjoying his work in transition there as well. So top line, your silver lining of the night. And man, if they're not a silver lining for the season as a whole, I don't know what is. I guess I have to touch on Samuel Montembeau in that game as well, because I saw a lot of people getting down on him on Twitter, and I get it. That third goal was definitely on him. That was a bad rebound. You got to have better control than that. That was a weak shot from the point. You got to smother it, or you got to steer it into the corner, one of the two. So I charge him for that one. But really, honestly, like, look at the rest of those goals. The one that goes off Savard's skate, what's he supposed to do about that, realistically? The tip from Domi, that's on his defense for not covering Domi out in front and tying him up so he couldn't tip it. And then the last one, the Bobby McMahon goal, I mean, that's kind of a partial, it's a break. You know, he gets sent in there with half a step on the defender, and nobody really is able to hook or you know, stop him from getting that chance on goal. I don't know what you really want Montembeau to do there. So I don't really think that game was on him. I think that was exactly what I said in the recap there, is they kind of they hit the snooze button for, you know, about 8 minutes there in the second period, and you can't do that against a team that is as offensively gifted as the Toronto Maple Leafs. You got to keep your foot on the gas, and that's just the one thing that they failed to do in that game, and it cost them. Outside of that, listen, I don't have too much to say about this game, and like I said, I'm super sick today, so I'm not going to go very long with this episode, but I do want to bring up Justin Barron. Gets called up randomly as a result of Jack Eye obviously not being available. If Jack Eye was available, I don't think there's any reason to call Barron up, and Barron actually, for my money, played very, very well in that game. You take a look at his stats if you don't believe me. 75% of even strength shot attempts in the Montreal Canadiens' favor when he was on the ice. Expected goals for of 61.31%, built largely off the fact that they really won the scoring chance race while he was out there. Now, that being said, he got pretty soft minutes. They sheltered him the best that they could. But I would argue that there's not very many truly soft minutes against the Toronto Maple Leafs. That's a tough team to have to come up and play against. And Justin Barron's a guy that he's had a tough season, but it was nice to see him come out, get an opportunity to play up with the big club and do really well in those minutes that he got. So, you know, hats off to him. That's not an easy position to be in, to get thrown in like that against one of the top teams in the Eastern Conference and have to play 15 minutes in the NHL all of a sudden when you've been in the AHL for quite some time. So I thought he fared very well, and kudos to him for that. Last thought that I have is on the injuries. Again, Caden Gooley, that looked like a concussion to me. That was a bullshit hit from Nikita Kucherov. I really hope they just hold him out. I don't think there's any need to bring him back for, what, one of the, by the time he's ready to go, there'll be, what, 2-3 games left? Just don't do it. I would just say keep him out. Let him practice with the team at most. There's no need to risk him. As for Arbor Jack, I really don't know what's going on with him. They haven't really given a whole lot of information, so it might have just been like a day-to-day thing, but boy, did they miss him in that game, because, you know, Michael Pezzetta had to fight Ryan Reeves, and that's not a fight that Michael Pezzetta should be taking. That's a fight, really, that's kind of tailor-made for Arbor Jack Eye in that game. And then Ryan Reeves, of course, fucking, you know, he's hyping up and talking shit to the Habs bench after he beats Michael Pezzetta. It's like, cool, you beat a guy that's like 30 pounds lighter than you. What are you talking about? anyways, they missed Arbor Jack Eye a lot in that game. So Arbor Jack Eye, I might say a little bit differently. Like, I would prefer to see him get back into the lineup as soon as he can. But the caveat to that is if he's not 100%, then keep him out as well. We don't need to risk anybody. Like I said, we're still looking at Tankathon every night and trying to figure out what our percentage chance is going to be at the first overall pick when the lottery rolls around. So I don't think we have any reasonable need whatsoever to risk anybody to injury at this point. So keep him out, let him get healthy, and we'll see what the remaining games have for us here. I'm going to cut it off there because I'm super sick. I need to go to bed. We're running just a little over 17 minutes. Alors, une soirée, pas mal de spic pour les employés de soutien. We are on Spotify, Google Play, Apple. I'm on Twitter at DrakeMT. Drop me a follow. I would appreciate that very much. This episode was brought to you by BetOnline. Thank you, as always, for listening. And, of course, à la prochaine.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.